On January 24th, Apple Computer will introduce Macintosh. And you'll see why 1984 won't be like 1984.
Okay, good afternoon. This is Richard Hsu, host of Hsu Untied, and today I'm really thrilled and honored to have as my guest a legendary Apple co-founder, Steve Wozniak. Woz, welcome to the show.
Hi, great to be on. Thanks for recognizing me.
So let me start. I'm sure you've told this story 1,000 times, but I just want to start by asking you, you know, how does it feel to have been, you know, when you kind of look back historically and was the co-founder of such a, you know, obviously now such a legendary, one of the largest cap companies in the world. I mean, how does that feel? Do you still feel, you know, just incredibly lucky, or how do you kind of reflect on that?
Well, I think at a recent Silicon Valley Comic Con, Stan Lee said the greatest superpower is luck. I know that I was extremely skilled in certain things that I did, the engineering of the early computers, finding formulas that really made things affordable, finding ways to make a personal computer experience affordable and for a worthy computer, and all those things. But you know what? I was going to build that computer in that year when it became possible, when I saw the method, I was going to build it for myself. And I didn't have these ideas, oh my gosh, start a company or something like that. I think people that start companies sometimes jump too soon when the building parts, the cost of chips, for example, is too high to make it feasible and reasonable. Also, luck's a big part of it. Now, one thing is, how would you ever bring a computer in the home? Those earliest years when we didn't have computers in the home, and then we would have them in the home. How would you get people to buy a computer in the home was the big question. And that boils down to a lot of marketing. But the answer was largely you couldn't have a computer in the home if all computers did was inventory and sales figures and that kind of stuff. It had to be fun, had to play games. Computer games at the time were very weak. Atari had started the arcade game revolution.
Right.
And the Apple II computer that made our company really was, we started a company with the product all done. It's done. Okay, let's go ahead and produce it. That was the first time ever that games, arcade games, were in color. The first time ever that arcade games were software. So this was, I mean, so that those times, I mean, to go back step by step by step, you know, I can go back and figure out what enthused me and drove me. The same things were enthusing other people. I just happened to have exactly the right skills and background and experience to kind of get a head start. And I love doing things that are fun. I love doing things that are different. And that was a big part of making a successful start for the company. Once we got started, little did we know that that product was going to be our, you know, bloodline for the next 10 years.
Now, when you were at Apple and doing it, did you kind of feeling that you were really on to something, or you really had no idea this was going to be this explosive, you know, revolution?
Well, there was no Apple. It was just me alone in an apartment working for Hewlett-Packard, designing the hottest tech product of the times, the handheld digital scientific calculators.
Right.
And if there was any foresight in this, we couldn't have started Apple. Now, coming up with the products, you know, I wanted it for my own use. I had two uses, productivity and fun. I shared a computer at Hewlett-Packard to write programs and simulate all my designs. Now I would have my own computer. This is something I had dreamed of. I had told my dad in high school, someday I'm going to own a 4K computer of my own. And when he said it costs as much as a house, I said, I'll live in an apartment. So this was like absolute dire need. And the market was only one person. Steve Jobs wasn't really around. We never had a company in a garage, by the way. We never talked about a product in a garage or did any engineering in a garage or prototyping or manufacturing or the business Steve did on the phone in his bedroom. Huh. I mean, these were humble, humble start. But the thing is, you have to start humble with almost no money. We had no savings accounts. We had no rich relatives, nobody that could loan us money. So we had to start with the first idea was build a PC board for $20 and sell it for $40 to help people build my computer, which I'd given away. The Apple I wasn't the great computer. It was the formula, but not the great computer. Huh. The Apple II was one where Steve Jobs took on the business role. This is equally critically important to the engineering. You got to have engineering, marketing, and business just at the very start. And Steve went out searching ways to raise money. And he talked a business talk. And we got an angel investor to put the money in. And the angel investor owned as much of the company as Steve and I did. You always hear about two kids in a garage. And it's really funny because there was no garage and there was no two kids. There was a third partner. And he was our mentor and our he had experience.
Right.
He ran marketing for us for a long time and was CEO for a while, Mike Markula. And he told us that we'd be a marketing-driven company because marketing-driven companies like IBM, that's what made them great. So he told us, here is how you set up a technology company. Here are the positions that you hire. He had been in technology companies and knew that stuff. We were just young in our young 20s and no business experience. He told us what our roles would be and our responsibilities and gave clues of marketing. Steve Jobs picked up on the marketing and went in learning that side of things because it's like learning art, learning about art. And Steve didn't quite have the engineering and, you know, all the math skills and all that stuff for the tech side. So he took off that and his marketing, he learned to speak well and tell the world why these computers were useful, what you could do with the computer, and that was absolutely critically important. So he was the marketing of the product that was all of our revenues for the first 10 years.
Now, when you met, how old is Steve Jobs when you met him?
When I met him, he was 16 and I was 20. So I was in college, he was in high school. And we were introduced by a friend. I had been designing computers. I got to where I could design any computer in the world in 2 days in my bedroom. If you give me a description of the computer, its architecture, I can design it in 2 days. This was in high school. And so I just did it for fun. I never thought I'd have a job designing computers. But I had a summer job programming for a company when I walked in the wrong door by accident. I got a job. And in that job, one of the executives said he could get me chips that I could never afford to build a computer. So I built a computer of my own design called the Cream Soda Computer, built it with a friend, Bill Fernandes, who was very important, had a lot of links between myself, Steve Jobs, Hewlett-Packard, Apple. And Bill said, you got to meet this guy, Steve Jobs, because he's into the digital electronics. He's up on it, and he plays pranks at school like you do. And that's how we met. And I will tell you, the first day I met Steve Jobs, I took him three houses down from where we were building that Cream Soda computer, three houses down to my house. Steve was in high school, and he didn't really have albums of music. So I showed him all the Bob Dylan liner notes and the lyrics to the songs and shared that with him because that was like the biggest driving force in my life. Sort of influences in, you know, how you should think and what amazing poetry is all about. And so we got turned on to that. And for the next 5 years, before Apple, we were friends that you never hear about the Steve Jobs much because it was like Steve Jobs zero. I mean, I would drive him to college with his girlfriend and go up and visit a lot of times. And we'd go to concerts together. We would play pranks. We would tell jokes. He changed his personality very much. You know how your personality settles around age 18 to 23?
Yeah.
And then it's kind of permanent for life.
Yeah.
Steve formed that personality when we started Apple because he had always wanted to find a formula to being an important person in the world. And, you know, if you don't have drive, having drive was so critical, and that was so critical to Apple. But he wanted to be that important person, and here we were with a product that could raise money. I would never do it with anyone but my friend Steve Jobs. And we got a big investment. So now Steve Jobs was a founder. He wasn't a CEO. He wasn't an executive. He didn't qualify for any title yet, but he would learn how to do all these things. It was his drive and his inspiration that was pushing Apple. So Steve was now founder of a company with money, and he started assuming his role in life would be very different. He would appear in suits a lot and front pages of magazines and represent himself as the face of the company. And that's great. I was shy. I did not want to talk to press. I just wanted to go in the laboratory and keep designing. I wanted to be an engineer for life and then nothing more. So that was my love in life. So anyway, Steve's personality settled down, but he lost a lot of that young kind of like, let's play pranks and joking flavor. Everything had to be much more serious.
Interesting. Well, when you first met him in the early days, did he seem like a very mature 16-year-old or not really?
I'm not a very good judge of people. I had a lot of friends in my life that were younger, and I meet a lot of 16-year-olds now even 15-year-olds, 12-year-olds that are very mature. Right. So it's hard to pick them out. Looking back, it seemed to me that Steve was, I don't know. I don't put it as immature and mature. I was immature in a lot of ways. Mm. But, you know, when you're that young, it's more like just what kind of a person are you? And he was searching for things, and his friends were the people who had no money, and he didn't seem to feel that he belonged in his family a bit. And his friends were sort of like hippies. It was a counterculture movement going on. Mm. And I admired the thinking different of it. And I didn't do all the things, you know, like drugs and all that, that the hippies were doing. But I admired it anyway, so I hung around with them. And Steve was sort of one of them, walking around in bare feet and sandals, like you do to try to find yourself, if you ever read that book, Into the Wild.
Yeah.
It's got some philosophies about things that young people go through finding themselves. And Steve Jobs was very much like that. You would look at him and say, oh, he's got nothing, he's done nothing, he's not really going anywhere, he's doing some useless things. But then again, that's just a step in life to finding yourself. And things like school and grades, academic studies is kind of such a worthless reason to call some people intelligent and others not.
Would you say you were like best friends? Were you his best friend, or you guys were best friends before, you know, during that period before you started Apple?
Like a lot of people, even to this day, I have a lot of extremely good friends. And sometimes friends have different crowds of people. They have different friend groups.
Yeah.
And you don't know the other one. You're always isolated from them. So I think Steve had a lot of other friends. I considered him best friend. Mm. I was very shy and really didn't have friends. So somebody who liked the technology I would do, he would come into town about once a year, see some electronic project I had built for fun, starting with a Pong game, and we did Breakout, and I did a terminal. And he would always turn them into money because he was desperate for money. He had zero. Hmm. And so that was kind of good for both of us.
So tell me, why did you leave Apple? I know of a lot of people, but tell me specifically, I'm sure you've explained this to a lot of people, but why did you leave Apple when you did?
Okay, Apple started with a weak product. No, none of the big companies believed that these small machines could ever be worth much. And they had good, you know, they know market research, but their market is the people who were using the big, expensive computers. They didn't know new people would buy these things. The spreadsheet came along, and it made Apple very popular. Mm-hmm. Our sales shot up 10 times. Small businessmen could do something they never dreamed of in their life. And along with that, we had other improvements to our product, and we came up with the floppy disk for one. That was a great story. So now we went public. But now it came time, Apple kind of grew to a stage where it was managed. At first, I was creating, you know, very important things, interfaces to disk drives and cassette tapes and modems and all that kind of stuff and floppy disks, you know, for the product. But it got to the point that now we had managers and engineers would have to fill out 40 pages of documentation of what they were going to do. Heck, I just went into a laboratory, started drawing ideas of chip connections on paper, soldering them together, making it work. I was just an independent inventor who has an idea, wants to go in the laboratory and make it. And now Apple was to the stage that it was a big management structure, maybe over 100 employees. And I didn't fit into that. And I started thinking, well, now all the stuff that's going to come out of Apple will go through the management process and the little rare startups. When Bill Atkinson did HyperCard, for example, that was a good one that was just independent from one person. But it was going to become rarer and rarer. And I was thinking, well, gosh, I don't know. I sort of despondent, but I didn't leave Apple. I had an airplane crash.
Hmm.
And after the airplane crash, I had one of those short-term memory issues, but nobody knew it. I mean, I was going around talking about things. I remembered everything in the past. I rode my motorcycle. I did whatever I did. But I have no memories of that 5-week period after the crash, and nobody knew I had this problem. They just thought I was a little weird. After 5 weeks, I came out of amnesia. I talked myself out of it with logic one night. And whoa, all of a sudden, half of my brain was remembering things now, and half of it had been, the minute before, had been holding up all memories. So I called up Steve Jobs the next day, and I said, the most creative people I know at Apple, my favorite friends of all, are all working on the Macintosh project. I had been on that project. And I said, Burl Smith, even though he never went to college a day in his life, by learning and trying and practicing, he got as good as I am at designing with very few parts. So the Macintosh team is in good shape. I'm going to go back to college for 1 year to earn my degree. I only had 1 year left to go. This was my last chance in life. I'd put it off for 10 years. And somehow it's an important thing when you've worked that hard on something. Let's say, you know, 15 years of schooling, and one more will get you that degree. So I was, my name was famous, so I went back to Berkeley under the fake name. They type in their computers fake names for people who have famous last names. Mm-hmm. And I went under the name Rocky Raccoon Clark, and that's what it says on my Berkeley diploma. Now, I did not formally leave Apple. I actually got a small paycheck while I was there. I actually did speeches on the technology circuit now and then, all for free, you know, just whenever Apple wanted me to do something or a club wanted me to do something. We came from a club. So I kept doing stuff and earning a small salary. And then I went back to Apple as a senior engineer and working on Apple II projects because the Macintosh failed. I mean, the heartfelt day of my life was the day that Steve introduced the Macintosh, but it failed so strongly. And we had to grasp at straws and figure out a strategy to build a market for 3 years for the Macintosh, but keep Apple II revenues coming in. So I went to the Apple II division and worked on new Apple II that became the Apple II GS eventually. I worked on some ideas called the Apple IIX and helped get things inspired and rolling that way. Then I left again in around 1985, but I didn't really leave. I stayed on I stayed under employment on a small salary, very token salary, but I wanted to be on Apple's payroll computer every single week from the start of the company, and I have been until today. I'm still getting a small salary.
Oh, that's interesting.
That was a token, and I left to form a company to build a remote control, and I would never go behind being disloyal to any company I worked for. Hewlett-Packard, I offered them the computer, and they turned me down basically 5 times. So I wasn't going to leave Apple. So I went to a blackboard and described the universal remote control. They didn't exist back then. And I described what I wanted to build, you know, fresh new idea. And they gave me a nice letter saying, you know, how I was not competing with Apple and they wished me luck. And I was still an employee getting money from Apple. But more than that, I'm under an employment contract. So I went off and I started this company. We built a great universal remote control. And then my life went into family and a lot of philanthropy, building museums in San Jose. But I didn't, you know, to say I left Apple, not in my heart.
Well, when you look back at some of the other things you've done other than Apple, you talked about the universal remote control, the philanthropy. What are kind of some of the highlights now that you've, what's some of the stuff that you really enjoy doing, you really feel good about having accomplished?
Just helping young people all the time. Mm-hmm. It's a little known fact, but I had a goal to teach 5th grade after being an engineer, and I kept that goal. Eventually, giving monies to schools was easy and has little meaning, but giving yourself means a lot. So I went and I wound up teaching 5th graders how to use the computers for every subject in school, to present them, to make them look good, to own a computer, to be on networks, to not to be computer geeks, like programmer types, you know, like technicians and scientists, how to use the computer in normal ways. And my class was 200 hours a year. It was voluntary. Every student in the local public school, I sent my kids to public school. I have reasons for that. But so I taught them, and then I started teaching 6th to 9th graders in advanced classes. And then I even got into programming there. And I would teach teachers on occasion, groups of teachers. So I taught, I got up to 7 days a week, and I wound up teaching for 8 years of my life.
Well, look, it sounds like you've kind of done it all. You've obviously started companies, you were with Apple, you've built computers, you do speeches. Anything missing, anything that you, any other goals that you would like to do, or really you enjoying what you're doing now and nothing specific?
No, I have, my wife and I have so much fun in life, and we're so similar. We like the same things for the same reasons. And she was at Apple, in Apple education. I mentioned my teaching, and she was a geek at heart, playing with all the new technology and doing all the setups. So we love things like our car is a computer, you know, the Tesla.
Yeah.
So we have so much fun. And I also love to go on road trips, you know. Technology is a big thing. I follow it daily. I'm on my computer, checking every news item I can, thinking my thoughts about it, expressing them. They're all independent. I don't like to repeat somebody else's thoughts. But we love to get together. If we have 2 days together, 4 days, sometimes a couple of weeks, we just get in that car and let's make up a road trip. We'll find out how, you know, we go off the Tesla grid and say, we'll figure out how to get back. We're just love the adventures in life.
Well, Waz, it's been a fascinating conversation. It's an honor to speak to such a legend. I can't wait to speak to you in 5 years and hear what you've been doing.
Well, good for you. Thanks for having me on.
This is Richard Hsu and Steve Wozniak. Thanks.